Let's talk a little bit about the flex data that was presented in the ASCO at a plenary session. Can you summarize sort of what your take was of the key points from that, what you thought about Tom Lynch's discussion, and kind of how you're all putting it together right now in your own head?
Well, I think I'm a believer that the goal of the therapy should give patients the best quality of life for the longest period of time. And the idea of a biologic down the road, you can look at multiple targets to put with combination chemotherapy. If you look at the cetuximab data, the overall survival of 6 weeks was statistically significant, yet the progression-free survival was no different. That relates to another issue because there are studies, phase three studies, that look at progression-free survival as an endpoint, which is they're trying to get the data out sooner as a surrogate. And here's an example of where the progression-free survival was no different, but the survival was different, 6 weeks. And remember, they took patient population that was EGFR positive on immunohistochemical stain, and all they had to do was have one cell positive. That's 85% of the patients had that, at least that, so they had a big numbers of patients. The study showed that Asians overall did well, but they did well in the chemotherapy as well, while the Caucasian population did better with the cetuximab data. And the toxicity was reasonable in what you'd expect. In bevacizumab-ineligible patients, I think cetuximab is a reasonable choice.
Yeah, it's interesting because the benefit was somewhat modest. On the other hand, there's nothing too exciting right now for the bev-ineligible type patients. And I've been surprised that I hear kind of the same message that you just said, that it is a consideration. I guess certainly the fact that there's no serious complications, but there are the dermatologic issues. How do you think that's going to play out in clinical practice? I mean, have you used cetuximab yet in any
patient? I did a study of cetuximab and erlotinib together, and this major toxicity was skin rash.
I bet.
And the most serious of the skin rash we had was grade 3, and yet that was the best response we had. So can you put those two drugs together? Maybe with some difficulty. I think, you know, if you look at the skin rash in erlotinib, there are patients that get it bad, and of course the skin rash is associated with a better response the worse the skin rash. Do patients like it? Not particularly. Do patients like the fatigue associated with the drug? Not particularly. So I think you got to weigh the risks versus the benefits. I think what is more telltale about, and I thought you were going to ask the question of, are all patients eligible for Avastin getting it? And the answer is no. And I think there's two reasons. One, I think the doctor has a bias of who they're going to put the patient on. Some is related to cost. And the other, the patient has a bias when they hear all the side effects of stroke, bleeding. And remember, we're talking about less than 5%.
Versus a lethal disease and 100%.
Yeah, so I don't minimize it, but I say look at the risk versus the benefit. And remember, the response rate to bevacizumab with chemotherapy is something like 34% versus then less than 20% in the studies, that 4599 ECOG study. And I think they're loosening up the requirements based on some of the work of showing that you can give it with brain mets, you can give it up in patients that have been on anticoagulants. So I think you're going to see a loosening up of the eligibility. I think what's more critical is really I'd like to see the studies that are going to use bevacizumab and cetuximab with chemotherapy. I think if you're going to advance the field, the idea to me is to advance the field. So do I look at the cetuximab data as earth-shaking? The answer is no. Do I look at it as a building block to the next level or next advance? The answer is yes. And I think the goal really is to make stage 4 disease a chronic disease.
I guess in terms of the issue of cetuximab and bevacizumab in colon cancer, there have been a couple of trials, actually one at ASCO, CAIRO2, and then the PACE study prior to that. Of course, they're different diseases, but not too positive results.
Yeah, well, we don't even have to go further than that. We can say, look at the AVAIL study, which was bevacizumab with gemcitabine cisplatin, and it wasn't a positive study survival-wise. Now, do we say maybe the problem is, you know, if you look at the NCCN guidelines, we didn't say with bevacizumab you can use it with any regimen. There may be differences between regimens that you can use these drugs to. That has to be investigated.
What about the type of chemotherapy utilized or that you might consider utilizing with cetuximab?
Well, right now, I'm going to use it with vinorelbine and cisplatin. That's the way the study was designed. Understand something. This drug has already been used with Taxol carboplatin. Lynch presented that data, and there was just a press release by Dr. Rowinsky saying that the survival data wasn't statistically significant, but the study wasn't powered to meet that. There were over 300 and some odd patients. I'm not sure that is legitimate since it was a phase 3 study.
Getting back to bevacizumab, you mentioned the fact that, you know, it's not being utilized in as many patients as theoretically would be eligible. A lot of people in practice have concerns or thoughts about the issue of where the tumor is located, centrally versus distant, and yet the investigators say they don't see a difference there.
Well, I think the one thing that I do follow is the appropriate patients that the ECOG study 4599 used. I do not give it in squamous cell. I do not give it in central lesions. And I'm going to knock on wood if I can find it, because I've not seen the bleeding, which other people have. So I try to follow with that group of patients using bevacizumab the appropriate indications.